John Boy Media has a new teammate. It's iHeart Podcasts. What does it mean? John Boy Media shows can now be found over at the Dan Patrick Show. That's right. How cool is that? Wake and Jake and Jimmy's Three Things have joined the iHeart Podcast and Dan Patrick Show family. And the best part, they'll still continue to be the same shows you know and love. If you couldn't tell, we're excited about this one, and thank you guys for listening.
Welcome back to the Compound Podcast. This is episode 144. 144 of the Compound Podcast, presented by Parse Rum. I love Parse. You love Parse. A bar close to Wrigley. Nisei. N-I-S-E-I. They just got Parse Nisei Lounge close to Wrigley. Bleacher Jeff. Is a mainstay there. They believe he bartends there and plays music sometimes. They got some Parse in. They're going to do like a Connect Parse drink. They're experimenting, but they're going to do some Parse stuff there. So check that out. Also, if you are a bar in Chicago, in Wrigleyville, anywhere that wants to put Parse behind the bar and serve some route drinks, you let us know. You let the Compound Podcast know and we'll take care of you.
We got you covered.
Not my best intro, but we had a great episode last week with Joey Votto. One of the things we said last week was that we wanted to talk a little golf.
Hang on. I had so many people reach out to me about that episode. Like my friends who don't listen, like they were like, yo, I actually listened to this last episode. That was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about it today because I did MLB radio and I was like, we legitimately could have talked to Votto for 5 hours. Like I could have talked to him for 5 hours about hitting and just kept asking him questions.
I think it was cool. Like the two hitters or two bigger hitters, like him and Donaldson, who we had on, they were so into it. You know, I think that's pretty cool, especially at their age where they could be like, just see ball, hit ball, do this, do that. But they went into such detail. Like even Dakota texted me, he's like, this is actually a different language right now.
I saw a friend of the pod, Donaldson, at this golf event that I was at. And we were talking. He is excited for this year. He's been doing some biomechanics stuff, looking at his swing, doing some work. He's like fired up.
Donaldson?
So, yeah.
Is he starting a contract with the Yankees?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For all the Yanks fans out there, if you want to get a little excited about somebody.
You hear that, Tom?
Josh is feeling good. He's feeling sexy.
Glad he's feeling well.
Tom's the classic, like, Tom's a real fan. Like, he doesn't blindly love every player, and I like that.
No, but he's also the real fan where he will fall in love with a player for no reason.
Donaldson starts out with 10 homers the first month. He's like, I love this guy. He's my favorite player.
That's exactly right.
Friend of the Compound Podcast. He becomes friend of the Compound Podcast again. Currently, he's not that to me.
That's true.
My golf event was in Orlando and the foreplay guys were down there, a bunch of dudes, a bunch of ex big leaguers, some actors, football players, some ex football players.
Go ahead and name drop a couple for us, huh?
You mean name drop a couple? What'd
you see out there? Tom Glavin?
Maddox, Roger Clemens, John Lester, Johnny Lesta, Brian McCann, Mark Mulder, got some friends. It was awesome. It's a great time playing competitive golf for the like first time since high school, where it was your own ball into the hole. No, like no partner to back you up. No, no par in the hole. And you're just trying to make a birdie putt or anything. Challenging. I had the nerves going, pretty nervous on the first tee, hit some good ones off the first tee, nervous with the putter. Didn't really roll it that well all week. A couple cold shanks out there.
Did it help having Lester in your group and then your brother on your bag? So like you had like, I mean, not like you were nervous, but you know what I mean? Like, did it help having them? Like, oh, I've played with Lester a million times.
Yeah, it was definitely Lester helped me out a lot because he was like talking through like etiquette, like, and his caddy, Nick, who's a good friend, is like talking through a little bit of etiquette with like the, hey, you know, don't, they hate when you don't stand here. Like, you can't stand there. Like, you don't, make sure you take the flag, you know, don't walk in front of the girls or do this. Like, because they're competing, like, this is their job and they're out there competing and you're just like trying so hard not to get in the way.
It's like a real LPGA event, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like they get tournament prizes.
Yeah. And like, yeah, we're using a rangefinder. Like, we're allowed to use like some more technology. So like, you don't want to say the number too loud, or you don't want to say like, you know, you don't want to mess them up and say like the wind, you know, I thought the wind's coming this way. And they're like, you know what I mean? So we're just like over here, just like talking. So I think it's, we got 155 on the gun.
That's something that my dad kind of instilled in me growing up, was like the golf etiquette. And like, I'll play now and I'm so like programmed to that where I can't just let it go. But like, I'll be like with my brothers and my friends, but hey, like, you know, move out of the way. Like, let this guy hit. If we're playing with somebody else, like if the flag is windy and you have the flag in your hand, I turn it the other way. Just like, it's crazy how much, especially if you're playing very competitively, like those people do, like that shit, it matters to them, which is why, like, you could do whatever you want to me when I'm whatever. That's the least of my worries, you know? But like, if you're in a wrong, like if they can see you a little bit, they'll back off their ball and be like, hey, can you move?
And like, if you were like, when you play with your friends, you know, you could be on the green and away, and generally you're going to hit, like, the person who's just off the green is going to hit, right? And like, get just on
play
the
ready golf. Yeah.
So like, there was times where I was not on the green, but also not away. So like, you would have to let somebody putt who was on the green and then hit your shot. And like, that was and the other weird one was calling for like a rules official.
That's wild.
So like, I had a ball that got caught in a sprinkler head. But I was also, it was shaved down to the water. So I couldn't drop my ball without it rolling more than two club lengths. So I had to call for a rules official. And now and it's on a par three. And I feel like I'm holding up.
You're holding like everybody up.
Yeah. Everybody, this girl's got a birdie putt from like 8 feet. I'm taking like, it's only a couple minutes, but like calling the rules official over, and we're going and we're marking it and we're dropping the ball and dropping it. And then I got to find a way to place it without it rolling. I mean, and all of that, I was just like, I am so sorry for this delay.
I was just going to ask, because I didn't actually get to watch the event because I don't have cable. What was the format? What you guys were going out with, less like, when you went out, who was out with you? Was there LPGA players with you? Was it just Lester? Was it a combination?
So there were three person tee times. So it was one LPGA player and then two celebrities. So my first day was me and Lester. And then I played with Glavin day two. Or Michael Pena day two, Glavin day three, and then Kevin Millar day four.
How was that with Millar?
What?
How was Millar?
Millar is great. We, you know, we play golf here in Austin, so that was another comfort pairing for me. And he's so much fun and carries the conversation. He's great. So
was the pace of play like a huge difference? Because like you said, like when we play together, it's like, you know, like guys just go to their balls. And even if you're in front of the other person, like you just kind of stand to the side, watch them hit. Like you just hit, like you're not really waiting. Like, oh, you're the farthest one back. Like you hit. It's like, nah, if you're at your ball, just go ahead and hit it.
I mean, we were playing legitimate. It didn't feel that long because you're so in every shot, but we're playing legitimate 5 hour rounds.
Yeah.
And you're every shot that you hit, you have the yardage book, you have the green. You know, you're looking at the pin sheet, so you're looking at where the flag is, the slopes on the greens, making the decision on yardage, like doing the calculations on that. And there were some tee boxes we had to wait for sure, but you know, they're long days out there, and like you're reading the putts. Everybody's like taking their time on the greens, and it wasn't like we were holding out the group behind us or the group in front of us was holding us up, but like it just, the pace out there is every shot matters, so it's so much different. And we were picking up, we couldn't make more than double. So like we were picking up after double too.
If you watch like on TV, like when they, I mean, there's some times where they're marking or they're lining a putt up, they'll line it up, like walk to the other side, come back. And like, if I take a certain amount of time, sometimes if I'm playing with my friends, I'm like, hey, my bad, I'll go, like whatever. There's no care in the world for these people sometimes. Like they're taking like 6-7 looks to make sure they're aligned correctly. And I'm watching sometimes, I'm like, bro, you gotta hurry up.
None of the girls that I played with were slow. Like, they all played at a pretty good pace, but there was definitely just a purpose to everything they did. And like looking, and what I was really surprised by, one of the things I was really surprised, first of all, the girls are amazing. Like,
they don't miss. They do not miss.
They're so good and they are so consistent. Their ball striking is incredible. I'm hitting it way by some of these girls and they're hitting five woods to a foot, like just feathers. But they didn't really use their caddies much on the greens.
So I was going to ask about the caddies, if you heard any conversations that they had with them.
Yeah.
But because like, I think putting, unless the person really knows the course, I feel like if you have two different looks at a putt, like if you're saying like, I'm your caddy, like, Ian, you know, I see this moving left to right. And you're like, fuck, well, I see this moving right to left. I think that kind of, you know, can mess with you. Same thing, you know, I don't know, like hitting or pitching, like, hey, this guy's, his heater's riding and you get in there and he's throwing this. You're just like, wait, what?
No, it's not. What did you say? There's definitely occasions where they asked the caddy and like, dude, like, I'm not quite seeing this. What do you think? But I would say like 90% of the reads were solo. And they just, you know, the caddy just like stood off to the side of the green, held the flag or whatever. And the girl would just like find the line and they rolled it so well. But it was, I was surprised by that. Cause like Chris and my brother and I are like, we're like, we're trying to read everything together. And like, what do you see? What do I see? I can't see anything. And like, these girls are just like doing that themselves. They did definitely have conversations about, you know, club selection and trying there. A lot of times with the caddy, they were trying to figure out what the number was, where the miss was, but you know, on the greens, it was not much at all.
I think it's cool when they're in the fairway and they're like, yeah, well, you know, it's 142, probably a little wind hurt at probably, you know, probably playing 146. If you land at 144, you should be good to take a one stop hop right next to the pin. And it's looking at the yardage book, it's going to go down that way a little bit. So yeah, just hit your 145.3 club and you'll be good. It's like, wait,
yeah, what? There was so much of like, especially at that golf course, like long was dead. So it would be like, back flag 145. Okay, that means the middle's 135, the front's 125. Like, we have 128 to cover this bunker. Like, right doesn't hurt us, left we're dead, long we're dead. Like, all right, we're gonna try to hit something like 135, 10 yards right of the flag, or 5 yards right of the flag, you know, and like trying to figure that out. It took me a few days to like really even contemplate, because I was like, the first day I just like missed long with the guy and just like, okay, well, I just made double.
You know, my biggest gripe with the whole tournament, then I don't know if we talked about it last week, if it was off air or not, I turned it on Golf Channel, so I was trying to see you out there, and it's just Marty Fish. It's nothing but Marty Fish. I'm like, this guy played on the PGA Tour, all right, enough. Let me see the celebrities, let me see Glavin, let me see Mulder, let me see Happ, let me see Lester, and it's just Marty Fish and that's it. And I'm like, enough, we don't care. He's very good. And he's dominating. He's up by like 20 points or however the scoring system was. I'm like, okay, he wins. Show other people.
My friend sent me a cool snap of you hitting out of a bunker, like an intermediate bunker shot. I think on a par three, you were kind of pretty far right.
But it was a hell of a bunker shot.
It was a really good bunker shot.
That hole was three. It was a par four. Dogleg right par four. Right. It was like 320 maybe. And that day they moved it up to like 245 or 250. And we kind of had like a left, right helping wind. I hit 3 iron on the green, rolled off the back. So like it hit like kind of back right in the green, bounced and like rolled over back right bunker and left me with this kind of like gross, maybe 30 yard bunker shot.
Look at the kid. Oh shit. It's all blurry.
And I didn't, like, the cameras were up there the whole time, but you never knew, like, if they were filming you or the girl or, like, actually. And that was one of my best shots of the week, and it was the only shot that made it on TV. So, maybe. Yeah,
I was pissed. I kept it on for, like, a good 30, 45 minutes. I was like, all right, enough. I've seen
Marty Fish is playing so well, and he was playing with the leaders because he was, you know, he himself on 4 days shot, like, 8 or 9 under. So, he was dominating.
Ugh.
But, yeah, he got a lot of the TV time.
I was on my way out to California and I checked after the first day and I tried watching and it worked for like 2 minutes. And I was like, there's no way that I'm able to watch a live event on a flight. And I was streaming it and then it worked and then it cut out like whatever. And then I checked your score And I was like, oh no, Ian. Tough first day.
I mean, I got a lesson. I was trying to swing this swing that I realize now why, like, when you get in, like, when they talk about like tournament golf and like practicing enough on something to put it into play in a tour, like, by the sixth hole, I was like, this isn't working. Didn't know my numbers. And like, I tried to play it all day. And it was what it was like, you know, when you're 0 for 10 and you have like this feeling right in here. For Dakota, I would assume that it's like if you've walked three people and you can't find the zone and it's like right there.
Yeah. That's helpless. Very, very helpless feeling.
I was having that feeling.
That's how I feel every time I hit a golf ball. I'm just like, I don't know where this is going. It's just, go anywhere.
It's just right in my chest. Like, I was like, I can't figure this out. Like, I'm struggling so bad to hit a good golf shot. And I was feeling just like so upset about it. And so the next day I got to the range and was just like, you know what? I got to play my swing and go out and think about the flight of the ball and let it play. And then I played a lot better the next 3 days and actually got into somewhat of contention.
You were pure the next – I kept watching. I was because they were pretty good at updating with the leaderboard online, and they would do it hole by hole, and it was good. Like, did you eagled the first one on opening hole on the next day, right?
I opened on 10 the next day. I started on 10, and I hit a 2-iron in the middle, and then I had a 50-degree, like, 117-yard shot in, hit it, like, pured it. It's like, oh, that's pretty good. Hits behind the hole, spins back into the hole.
Does everybody go nuts? Was there a crowd?
It wasn't like a huge crowd. It was probably like 20 people, 25 people up there. And they were like, oh. And I started clapping. I was like, oh, my God. My brother has bad eyes. He can't see anything. So, like, he's, like, going to pick up the divot and, like, has no idea that it went in. That was a pretty cool. So I started the day with an eagle. And then I made another eagle on 2, which is a par 5. So the two eagles were big.
Were there skins in this? Could you guys sign up for skins?
They were skins. Yeah.
Did you win?
Those were both skins. Yep.
Fuck yeah.
But yeah, it was awesome. I will be very excited if I get the invite back next year and hopefully learn from my day one mistakes.
Can we talk about Zach being upset at shooting an even par at Pebble
That's
Beach?
What I really want to talk about. So while I was in Orlando playing this event at Lake Nona, Hilton Grand Vacations, really wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Zach, no free ads. We'll send the invoice.
Zach was on the West Coast playing in an event at Pebble, Spyglass, and Cypress.
No, Spanish Bay.
That's what I meant, Spanish Bay. And wait a minute. Zach's event was brought to you by SeatGeek. Today's episode is sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball season is coming up. Live events are back, which means you get $20 off tickets at SeatGeek with promo code COMPOUND. I wonder if that includes spring training at Sloan Stadium. I hope it does. If you go to SeatGeek, it's got to be .com, right? SeatGeek.com. Oh, we have a code down here. Code COMPOUND, $20 off SeatGeek. For tickets, I'm sure there's an app too. You can go the app on your phone, SeatGeek, all kinds of Cubs tickets, other tickets, Super Bowl tickets, maybe.
I can confirm spring training is going to be on there. So
spring training is going to be on it. Okay. Spring training in Arizona, come see the Cubbies or go to Lakeland and see the Tigers. Tigers.
Good point.
And SeatGeek, 20%, $20 off code COMPOUND.
Beautiful Zach. Lakeland.
Yeah.
Please tell us about your event that was sponsored by SeatGeek with code COMPOUND, $20 off.
Yeah, no, that was a blast. I've never been out to California outside of, I think, playing in Oakland just the last 2 years. And I mean, it's such a different world out there. You hear like, oh, you got to go out to Pebble. But I mean, it's an expensive, like, if you're just going to go out there and play, it's expensive. So, like, but, like, if you get a chance, obviously, all those three courses are ridiculous. But, yeah, I got invited to play in this event. It's called the Players' Cup from a friend who puts a team in every year. You know, there's a few bigger name people. Andrew Jones was there this year. I got to talk to Don Cheadle a lot.
No, that's your boy.
Yeah, Don Cheadle. Yeah, he was awesome. We talked a bunch, you know, what a completely different, but almost the same world, like acting is, like sports, you know, like how much, how long you prepare your whole life for this. And it was funny. Like I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, do you have days where you're just like shooting a scene or you're at whatever you're doing and you're just like, I don't have it. Like, I just don't have it today. And he was like, that's literally every single time you do a shoot. It just feels like you don't have it. And you walk away, you're on the drive home. You're like, fuck, you know, I could have done this better. And then like he said, he watches the movie and he's like, they use that fucking clip out of all the ones. Like, it was so cool to hear, you know, the little stories about what he does. I mean, he's in a lot of big movies, big show, you know.
He's so famous.
Is he a future Compound guest? Like, did you get that?
I don't know, man. I don't know. That was, I mentioned it. I did bring it up. You know, I'm always working. And you know,
no time off, even on vacation.
No, he, no, but I mean, yeah, it was great, you know, and I was really nervous. We shotgun on, we went Spanish Bay, Spyglass, and then Pebble. Played three rounds, you know, there were skins in all of it, close to the pin, bunch of things. But again, like what Ian said, it wasn't as competitive and, you know, by the books as yours was, you know, it wasn't obviously sponsored by PGA, LPGA, it wasn't on TV, but it was, you know, nerve wracking, like tournament golf, like there's a prize at the end, there's all these things, you know, and I'm like, all right, kind of, you know, your handicap is on there. You kind of have to play to your handicap. You're like, all right, well, this, you know, this guy's supposed to be pretty decent. Like, staying over the first tee, it's 9 o'clock. And I'm like, never been here before. I have no idea where I'm aiming, really. We had caddies, but I don't know how much. It's tough if you never played a course before to really trust somebody's line. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, hit it over that hill, you'll be fine. And then you hit over that hill, and you're like, I might be a little too far right. And you're just like, well, you just told me to go over that hill.
Yeah, I hit it right where you said.
Right. But no, I mean, that
was. What is your current handicap?
Right now,
did you put all those scores in?
Oh yeah. Come on. Put them in. Did you put yours in?
Oh yeah. They're pumping my handicap up.
Yeah. Crazy. Mine's right now is a plus 0.2.
Oh, so you've gotten worse.
No,
it used to be a plus 1.
I mean, yeah, back in my day, you know, but back no, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, 3 days there, Pebble walking up. 4 is like when you really see the course. I mean, it is, I had like my whole camera, I was like a little kid literally walking around, like all these guys have played there hundreds of times, and I'm walking around, I'm like, oh my god, look at that house. And out there they have this thing called the 17 mile drive up and down, like all the way up and down the coast, and my girlfriend and I drove down it, and like you see a house and you're like, all right, let me Zillow that one, see how much it is, and it's just like
20
mil, 25, 35. And you're just like, what do these people do that you can afford that house and not even live there? Cause there's nobody there. Mm-hmm. Like Charles Schwab has a house on one of the holes. Schwarby. like the Warriors owner's house is on hole 14 of Pebble. Like just the view, like you're hitting on 18 on 7, like, you have waves basically hitting you as you're teeing off. Like, it's just, it's a completely different world, man. It's incredible.
Was Pebble your favorite?
Yeah. And it's funny, like, we got there, played Spanish, Spyglass, and Pebble. And the first, we stayed at the Spanish Bay Inn, which is, again, absolutely ridiculous. You have the sunset right there at night. You can eat outside with a bunch of fires. Did you see the
bagpiper?
Saw the bagpiper. And so Spanish, it's a little different. It's more narrow, kind of, you know, not as long, not as hard, but they're like the course itself is not, I don't want to say as nice as the others, but like I was blown away by Spanish. And then the next day when we teed off of Spyglass, I was like, I mean, this is a completely different world. Like Spyglass, they play as part of the Pro-Am, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
And like that foundation, the fairway, the grass, everything about it was just so much different. So much like, and then Pebble, obviously, you know, just like I said, the views, and like on hole 6, Tiger, you know, hitting driver, and then, you know, 4-iron, whatever it is, like a completely blind shot. And like you see that walking up that hole, it's just like, I mean, literally Tiger is one of the most famous shots here. And then on the next hole, or on hole seven, the really short par three, just like it's on TV every single year. Somebody gets a hole in one there, you know, and then you walk up six or eight, I'm sorry. And last year, whenever it was, Spieth basically falls in. I don't know if you remember that shot. Like, yeah. He hits his drive and he's basically standing over it. And like,
did you
I walked up to it and I was like, bro, there's no chance I'm hitting a ball off of this. Like, I kept my distance and I'm like, I'm not taking another step. And this guy had to take a full swing moving forward while also basically falling backwards.
And he hit a good shot. I would have shit myself.
I literally would have been at the bottom of that still. Like, there's just no way. But yeah, you know, getting again, like basically standing next to Andrew Jones, right before he's on the ballot of the Hall of Fame. And like, just, I mean, it was awesome. It was really cool.
Was Pebble your best round?
Pebble was my best round. I did play very well there.
Then why were you I say you were upset. You weren't upset, but he texts us. He goes, shot a 72. Should have been a 68. Left a lot of putts.
Okay.
I might as well left my putter at home this weekend.
But that was a story again, like out there, like I've never played out there. You're trusting the caddies. Yeah. And like the greens are lightning. Ian, I'm sure, you know, where you play nice course all the time, but like faster greens, they're more fun to play. But like when you get really fast greens, it's so hard to trust anything. It's like, okay, I have a long putt. It's uphill, but it's like, do I leave this short? Do I get it there? Is it going to roll back to my feet? You know, like,
oh, you can putt it off the green on these courses. Right. Like if you hit it in the wrong area, it's like, that's gone. Like that's rolling down into a bunker. And it's like, oh my God, I was just putting.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like this whole, like, I didn't make any putts. So like, I legitimately had the first six holes, like on six, I had an eagle putt from 20 feet away, three putted it. Like I realistically, not even saying like, oh man, if I made that 45 footer, I'd be four under. It was just like, man, if I accidentally rolled in a few putts, it should have been, you know, but again, it all evens out. You get lucky on some holes. Like I made a really nice up and down from like a fairway bunker, 150 yards away. Like I bet you, I can't do that more than, you know, two times out of 10. Like it's just hard, but it was awesome.
End of the day, the people need a 1v1. Ian Happ versus Zach Short. And I'll be on the bag. I'll carry both bags over my shoulder.
Tom's coming.
I'll be unbiased.
We're just waiting for Tom to come set up some golf.
I'll be the commentator. I'll be Jim
Nance. Tom is up in the booth commentating.
That'll be cool because the Pro-Am is this week. The Pebble Beach Pro-Am is this week. So now that I've played it, I can be like,
oh, I hit that shot.
Like, oh, shit, Spieth, you're fucked. I'm over there. I was over there. You got no chance. You know, like. It'll be cool. And again, they were setting up too. So like,
yeah,
you saw all the tents, you saw huge AT&T signs everywhere. And the caddies we had, the one guy was awesome all weekend. We had him for all 3 days. He's on somebody's bag. I forgot the name, but the way that he was describing it, how I was like, oh, you know, are these guys going to come in and play Tuesday, Wednesday practice rounds? He's like, yeah, but they'll come in, but they might, they're like, most of the guys go over and play Cypress or what's the other one? The Monterey Country
Club. Monterey Peninsula Country.
Yeah, they don't even like play over here. They'll just wake up and come and play. And I'm like, I mean, it's just awesome. Just
what,
again,
what a life.
You know, let's just wake up and, you know, see the waves crash. Just go play some golf. You know,
it's one of the most. I've never played out there, but it's one of the most beautiful. I've been there a couple times.
I'm surprised that you haven't played out there when you guys go out there every year.
I'm a good fiance. I don't bring my clubs.
Okay, stop. Before that,
I was going to say stop. Stop. If you're telling me that's not, I'm not even going to say it. I was going to say that's a marriage that's doomed if you can't golf because you need your golf and you know that.
Oh, that's true.
Zach just looked at his girlfriend. It's like, that's just how it's going to be sometimes.
If Zach can't golf,
you're not going to have a very happy. You need to keep Zach fed and let Zach golf. And he's a happy guy. That's all he needs.
I went out there for my mom's 60th. So my mom's 60th was more important. We didn't bring our clubs. And then
that's fair. So, but don't blame it on your fiance.
Yeah. Well, the other time Julie and I went out last year and we started we went all the way up the coast. So we were only in Monterey for like 2 or 3 days and I wasn't just going to peace out and play golf for a couple of days. And also like, I want to, when I do Pebble for the first time or any of those courses for the first time, like I would like to be with, you know, some of my buddies, some of the guys I like to play golf with. You know what I mean?
if you're going out there on a couple, yes, you're not going to go golf and like, hey, like go shopping for a couple hours. I'm going to go golfing. Or hey, you want to
yeah, go
in the cart?
The
you want to sit in
I'm
the
gonna
cart?
Go play by myself.
Hours? Yeah.
I'm going to go play Pebble with a random threesome.
Yeah.
Solo.
It, I mean, it really something like, again, if you've even been out there and even if you haven't played, like when we did that 17 mile drive and it was before we played Spyglass and we saw bits and pieces of those courses and Pebble, like when you just see Pebble, it's just like, that is different. That's a very different place. Just everything around it. The trees, you know, you're on the water. Like
one side of the road is like this amazing forest and the other side is ocean. And we stood on the beach in Carmel and like looked at, you can see Pebble from the beach. And it's just like, is this heaven? What is this?
Yeah.
We should switch gears. We should talk about baseball.
Before Tom kills
us. Tom's falling asleep over there.
Tom already cut all this from the episode.
He's snoozing on us. He doesn't want to talk about golf anymore. Let's talk about baseball. Should we cover the Jeff McNeil extension?
4 for 50?
4 for 50. People, can I just address something? People are saying, Jeff McNeil, 4 for 50. What a steal. Jeff McNeil, sneaky, has 2 years of ARB left.
Does he?
He did just win a batting title.
He did just win a batting title, but he's got to cover 2 years of ARB, and they're paying him ARB 1, ARB 2, ARB 3. So he had filed at like 7.75, and they had filed at 6.25, maybe something like that. So they were in the middle at 7.
It's a huge difference.
Yep. And then you kind of assume that year three there is like a $4 or $5 million raise. So something like 11, there's a buyout for 2 in there. So they're valuing his age 30. He's a little stinky, a little bit older. They're valuing his age 33, 34 free agent years at 15, 16 ish a year. So when you look at the whole thing, you know, could Jeff McNeil have played out his last 2 years and gone and got a, you know, 3 year 60-ish? Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's in there. Maybe there's a 3 for 45. Maybe there's a 3 for 60 in there. Maybe there's something else. But, you know, he likes being a Met. They have a really good team. Gives him some security. He's a guy that made it up a little later. And you know, he's got 2 All-Star nods now and a batting title. And he's paid. So,
and it's tough, like you're saying, when you're not like, he's not a power guy. Like in today's baseball, it's like everyone wants home run hitters. So it's like, if he doesn't hit 300 every year, like he can't hit 250. He needs to keep hitting 300 or he's not worth the money. And right. That's just kind of like, that's why I see that as a fair deal both ways.
And again, like you said, he's an older guy. Like mm-hmm. when that deal comes across the table, like you don't, it's hard to say no. Like, yeah.
He's 2 years away from free agency, so he would have to back it up twice because he, unfortunately, with the system, he'll get penalized if he has a bad year going into free agency because of his age.
Right,
for sure. But
like, if he has a down year, you know, he's going to be, I think he's 31, he'd be 31 this year, and then he'd be 32 next year. So if he goes out at 32 and hits 260 with a, you know, 750 OPS, that's a 105 OPS plus or whatever, you know, and ends up doing that, like he'll be judged as declining because of his age, as opposed to, you know, hey, it's just 1 year. And he's, because guys that do that when they're 27, 28 still get absolutely paid. But, you know, as when you're looking at a 34, 35 free agent like that, it's a little bit different equation, but I know he loves to play golf. I know he's from San Luis Obispo area. He's a little Northern California golfer guy.
Pretty sure he was supposed to be on our team, but then he had to sign this contract or something. I don't know.
Well, he can go play wherever he wants to play now. Good for him. He could play.
I think he's a very good player, and I think I wouldn't say that's undervalued or overvalued. Like I said, it's pretty fitting number for his talent. And like, and exactly, his age is a huge factor in that. If he's 27 right now, maybe ride it out 2 years. see what happens.
Yeah, and you can't blame anybody for taking a deal and being on a really good team, being happy.
Exactly. Like, that's like, another huge thing. It's like he looks at the Mets roster and he's like, well, I mean, do I want to wait 2 years and then go sign a 3 for $60 with a bad team? I was going to name a team, but a bad team and like just kind of ride it out for the money. Like he's on a great team. He's going to get paid 12 and a half a year and probably hit at the top of that
again,
lineup for a
again,
long time.
It's still very good contract, a lot of money. He's set for life. Set for a few lives.
I heard a hot take on Talking Baseball that like they're really locked up. Yeah, I listen to Talking Baseball, Tom. Okay, no free ads. I heard a hot take that a lot of positions locked up on that field. Okay, Uncle Stevie brought back Nimmo. We got McNeil coming back. Obviously, Lindor's locked up. They had a third baseman. He's playing for another team, but they still got Escobar over there. They got Marte's there for a couple more years.
Does Alonso have a long-term deal?
Alonso does not have a long-term deal. That was our hot take. When's the Alonso extension coming through? Is Uncle Stevie going to empty his pockets? I think he's got one or two left. I don't know what RBR he's in. Tom, maybe look that up for the friends. I think he's in ARB 1.
Yeah.
I think he has two more years left. I think 19 was his rookie year. And I think he's probably got two left. But I don't know for sure.
Yeah. He's had 4 years of service time. Exactly. 4 years, 0 days. So
two more.
Two more.
That's crazy. It takes that long to be a free agent. It's disgusting.
A long time. Got to play 7 full seasons in the big leagues to be a free agent. What a time to be alive.
It's
incredibly broken. I know we talk about this a lot, but I mean, just every time you hear about someone like McNeil and you're like, this guy's not going to be a free agent until he's in his mid-30s and he's a great player and would obviously get a lot more than that for fair market value. But I know you guys go to every negotiation fighting about this topic. I know it's one of the most important things that the Players Association cares about, but man, it's such a bad system. Whoever invented the system really fucked the players over to begin with.
I mean, Ian, you'll be like, on the younger side at 29 or 28 is a 29 is a free agent. Like that's like almost young nowadays. Nico will be like super young.
Yeah. Ian came up within 18 months of your draft, right? You got drafted.
Yeah.
You're
get to the big leagues at 22. I will not be a free agent until 29.
It's basically like, if you don't come out of high school now, like you won't be a free agent until you're like 30.
Yeah.
Well, that's why Soto is a guy that's so rare.
Oh yeah.
So valuable because he will be like a 26-year-old free agent, which is banana land.
Which is 10 years of prime baseball.
And the only people that have done that in recent memory is Machado and Harper.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of anybody else.
And
but like
the deals they got.
Those guys get paid because they are so young going into free agency. But yeah, 29's young. Feel great about that. Happy for myself. But guys are so penalized by being late bloomers. And it's tough. It's tough but like a guy like Josh Donaldson was a little bit of a late bloomer and kind of, he did a good job. He played all the way through. He didn't take an extension. He had the power numbers and everything. And what does he get from Minnesota? The 3 for $4 for $80 or whatever.
Yeah, something like
and got
that.
Paid. He
he's
was
making, like yeah, he still do like $50 million at the start of last year, right?
Yeah, so there's, you know, there's guys that have done it and got paid, but it is, as far as the system goes, having to play 7 years, because technically it's 6, but the team will always make it 7. Like, they'll always find a way to make it 7, right? So
the fact that it's so easy for them to make it 7, right? I mean, the fact that it's like, he's going to be in the minor leagues for 2 weeks, and now we get an extra, like, you can't even blame them for taking advantage of the way the system is right now. Like, they would be stupid for playing him the full year.
That was the thing with Chris Bryant, even like, obviously everyone was mad about it. And like, it made no sense to have him down, but it's like, if I'm running an organization, I'm like, why would I not sit this guy in the minors for a month and like come up with an excuse for why and have one full extra year of him for half the price he's going to be worth? Like, it's stupid. It's just good business, but it's like you said, Tom, it's a broken system that's even a thing that they can do.
Yeah. And there are some things that are put in place this year that seem to have helped, where a guy like Julio Rodriguez plays the whole year.
Olivia Rodrigo, your girl.
He did get Olivia, he did get extended, but like, and so did Michael Harris, but these guys, because of the new rules, and if you finish in the top two of the rookie of the year, you get a full year of service. Like, because of some of that stuff, you know, maybe some of these guys got a chance to play a little bit sooner than they would have under the old system. You know, we're still trying to figure out if that works.
Would you say that's why guys like Michael Harris and like Rodriguez are taking deals so early? Because they're like, well, we have so long until we're free agent anyway. Like, we might as well get our money
now instead of waiting through league minimum. Can go wrong. You're like, it's bad to say, but like, even if you have bad years, not even talking about injuries, but like, if you have bad years, like, hey man, your value is diminishing. I don't care how long you play, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But definitely, but those guys, you know, if you make it up at 21, 22, and you turn that 7 into a 6 because you won a rookie of the year, or you got top 2 in the voting, and then you're coming back out at 28, you know, there's still the ability to make money through the ARB system. Like, and then you become a super 2 because you've played full years, like, those things definitely have an impact. And like, I think we all of the people that were in the room making the decisions would like love to see what if some of those young guys got that one less year of service and like actually did like 5 years down the road or getting to free, like what the numbers look like, how that moves the market, like some of that stuff. You can never blame somebody for like taking that like security up front and like taking care of themselves. But, you know, there is some like, how is this going to work? And it's going to take a long time to figure it out. But, you know, I think those are all questions before the next agreement of like trying to figure out how it is working when we get there.
Well, the hard part right now too, is that also guys are getting rewarded for past performance, right? I mean, you're talking about the guys who are getting the big contracts are guys now in their 30s. That's the time they're going to get paid. But I mean, we all know how a baseball prime works. That's the back half of the bell curve. Instead of the guys getting paid for when they're actually producing, they're getting paid much later, and the whole system is just awful.
But I think you're seeing now, I think we had a period of time where guys were getting, there was long contracts where guys were getting paid for what they had done. And we had a few examples of guys falling off pretty aggressively, right? And there was a lot of judgment on those contracts. And then we went to this like, super like pushed it the other way, and we went super short term. We paid guys a lot of money for a short amount of time, got super scared of the long term. But then you see the guy that we just talked to, you see a Joey Votto reinvent himself and become a really, really good player at 37, 38 years old. But what we're not talking about, and you see Justin Turner continue to play super well, and you see like there's and you see pitchers pitching at 38 years old and winning Cy Youngs. And I think that what we're not talking about is that the game changed so rapidly and so aggressively from 2015 to 2019. And some guys were caught up in that, and some guys didn't perform through that. But because the game changed so, so much, because guys started throwing on average like multiple miles an hour faster, like in a steeper like curve than we had ever seen before. The high heater came into the game in a way that we had never seen before. There was stuff on guys' fingers that we had never seen before.
Can't prove
shifts it. Shifts got more aggressive than when we had ever seen before. Like, there was all of these things. And then for pitchers, like, there was more data on guys. There was more information on dudes. Guys had to figure out, like, the guys like Verlander and Cole and all of these dudes, like, figured out how to be different while there was more guys, young guys coming up, throwing harder, and the front offices were using guys in different ways, disposing of relief pitchers quicker, using guys for less time as starting pitchers. And the game changed so rapidly in such a short period of time. And I think now you're seeing those great players being able to readjust. I mean, shit, Pulhos was, and I mean, let's not say that he was an all-star, yes, but like also his second half was unbelievable. And like he figured out what some of the things he had to do and how he had to combat some of the pitches he was seeing. And like the great players will do that. And we saw even like a Miguel Cabrera hit 300 for the better part of last year. And it's, I just think that the game has changed so much and we'll see those really good players continue to adapt to it. And I'm very excited to see some of these long contracts and where guys are in the second half of them.
I'm excited to see your long contract.
Hey, thanks, man.
Can I tell you, this is back to golf real quick, but I just saw this stat. Can I read it to you guys? You've heard this stat before. Current world number one, Rory McIlroy, has the fourth most weeks all time as the world number one at 113. If he remained number one for the next 7 years, he would still be 200 weeks shy of Tiger's record. So basically the next
4 years,
like, it would take like 11 years for him to catch Tiger as the longest reigning world number one.
Oh, you're saying if he was number one for that amount of time, he would still be 4 years short.
If he, from now until January of 2030, if he stayed world number one, he is still 200 weeks shy of Tiger's record. So another, 4 years. So basically he's 11 years away from the Tiger's record and he'd have to remain number one the entire time.
Is that good?
That's just one of those stats where it's like, that can't be real. Like, what do you mean?
If I had a time machine, I would go back to the year 1998 and I would relive Tiger's greatness.
Yeah.
And just like, and just soak it all up. Just take it all in.
That's one of those like mind blowing stats that it's like the, I was texting our group text about like Verlander getting into the hall and like you see his total career wins. And it's like, I think he's still like 50 shy of 300. It's like no one's ever going to get 300 wins again in the MLB. Like it's one of those stats that will just never happen again.
That's why it was such a big deal for Johnny Lester to get 200. Like,
yeah, you know, it's crazy.
Playing with some of these guys in Orlando, right? And you go and you look at their baseball and you're like, Tom Glavine was a really good player. He's a Hall of Famer. Like he gets it. This is the other thing. I would be on the tee, right? And they introduce like the first day they introduce Lester and they're like, John Lester, 3-time World Series champion. And I was like, sick. Yeah, Johnny, 3-time World Series champ. And they're like, Ian Happ, left fielder for the Cubs.
They didn't say All-Star?
No, they didn't say anything.
That's bullshit. Like, left fielder for the Cubs.
And I was like,
you got to say Gold Glove All-Star outfielder for the Cubs. What is that? They didn't. Oh,
no, they that just actually said, pisses me they off. Just said, left fielder for the Cubs. But you I looked up. I'm playing with Glavine, right? And they introduce him. They say, Tom Glavine, Hall of Fame pitcher. And I said, yep, that's love that. Hall of Famer. Unbelievable. Let me look up that baseball reference. Tom Glavine played 22 years in the show. He had 305 wins with a 600 winning percentage, a 3.54 career ERA. And he had
22 years.
He had a span where he from 1996 until 2007, he made 30 plus starts. 36, 33, 33, 35, 35, 35, 36, 32, 33, 33, 34. What? Talk about, and then like his first couple of years, it was like 34, 29, 33, 34, 33, 36, and then a couple of 25, 29, and then this run. But it's just like that dude was so healthy. You look at his innings pitched, he was over 200 basically every single year. And different time, but God bless me. Was his career impressive with 2 Cy Youngs and some Silver Sluggers. But just I was looking at that baseball reference page, just going like, you were so good at baseball. Oh, my God. But now it's like, if you have 200 wins, man, you did it. Like, you unbelievable.
Ian, do you ever, sit back? It's like you've had a very, I would say a great career so far, and it's kind of just getting started. But, think about the success that you've had, and then you'll look at somebody like Votto or Glavine, whoever you're talking about, and imagine how much continued success they had throughout their career and just for how long it was. Like even any of these, anybody that we're talking about,
and you're like, fuck, man, I got to do this another 10 years.
Yeah, it's fucking wild.
I mean, if I was going to have the 10-year run that Joey Votto had, I would have to play for 17 total years. Like, I would have to go 9 more, and I would be 37, 38. Like,
yeah.
What? Like, it's just like, it's like he's like talking about this 10-year run he had, like it was like light years ago. It's like, you're the best player in baseball for like 10 years. What are you talking about? It's just,
Like Miggy. It's like Miggy nowadays. It's like, man, this guy is one of the best right-handed hitters of all time. Like, and he debuted 20 years ago. It's like, this guy's been doing it forever.
It's and just
at such a high level forever, too. Like, just to consistently every year come out and produce.
Think about those guys, like how many bullpens they've thrown, how many balls they've shagged for during BP, like how many rounds of BP that Miggy has taken in his career. And like, he'll do it. He won't even do it every day, but like, I'm sure he was taking, I mean, I don't know, but like, was he taking it every day during his, you know, prime? But it's like, and he's there every day.
All the swings, swings.
I asked that question the other day. I asked you guys about swings, but like, I was like, do you think I've thrown a baseball over a million times in my life? Like, the motion of throwing a baseball, like, you think I've done it a million, like, do you think you've taken a million swings in your life?
I think
it's got to be close.
Yeah. 100%, dude.
And that's just insane. Like, and the reason I thought of it as the pitcher, I was like, well, my elbow hasn't blown up yet. And I've done this so many times. Like, it's got to go soon, right? Like, I've been doing this thing forever. Like, that's just crazy to me how many times we've done the same motion over and over and over. And we're still not there. We're still not those guys. We're still not Miggy or Tom Glavin.
I just couldn't imagine having like your body, your mentals in like that state of mind for that long.
And I don't want to knock like the Reds here, but like, and think of like Joey Votto, like he's played on some bad teams and like, you just keep go out and produce. You're like, what else can I do? Like,
what,
I can't,
you're still
like,
gonna
I
do
can't it. Sit and right. sulk. Like, he still goes out there and hits 300 and their team's 10, 20 games below 500. Like, that's gotta be tough. Like you said, mentally.
You know what I was thinking when we had that conversation with him though?
Hmm.
It's like, and there were some good Reds teams in there too.
Oh, there was some very good ones. I'm thinking more Rowland, like the last couple years, Scott like, especially Rowland, right? when you're 38, 39, and like you're playing on a team and you're 20.
He said he played with Griffey, right? He said he did. He
played with Griffey. Just like
Brandon Phillips. Ooh.
Brandon Phillips, Drew.
God,
Stubbs,
I've watched every Jake video of Bruce. That guy on YouTube. That guy has some of the best glove flips in the world.
A really good Scooter Jeanette.
Scooter.
Sonny Gray. He was very good on the Reds. Sorry, I just want to throw a pitcher in there. I know you guys only talk
David hitting. David Ross, Adam Dunn. He played with
he was
Josh
also
Hamilton
when on the Aroldis Chapman was coming up throwing 105.
Edwin Encarnacion on the 2017 played third base.
Wow. Was Adam Dunn like the first, like, hey, like, we're okay with you hitting 230 because you're going to give us 35 to 40 homers a year? Like, he's like the first guy that comes to mind for me where I'm like, his average wasn't always there, but he was going to hit you a homer. Like, if you needed a homer, he was hitting it out.
Let me tell you Adam Dunn's slash line in 2007.
I'm here.
Okay. Adam Dunn, 27 years old, played 152 games left field. Okay. 632 plate appearances.
Mm-hmm.
40 pumps. 106 RBIs. Hit 264 with a 386 on base and a 554 slug for a 940 OPS.
It's pretty good.
Oh my goodness.
Decent.
Joey Votto was 23, played 24 games. In those 24 games, he had 321 with a 360 on base and a 548.
That's kind of a crazy stat. And I was looking at Adam Dunn's. He had 4 straight years hitting exactly 40 home runs from 05 to 08.
No way.
Yeah.
Josh Hamilton played 90 games for the Reds that year at 26 years old. He hit 292 with a 368 on base and a 554 slug, good for a 922 or a 131 OPS plus. Bet nobody can name that slash line from old Josh Hamilton.
That's your guy, Ian.
That's my guy.
That is your guy? I was about to say, I saw him. That was, I believe, 06 or 07. I saw him the year 07. It was so I saw him the year before when he was doing his comeback with the Rays. He played in Hudson Valley, where I grew up as a season ticket holder, and got to meet him as a kid. One of the most intimidating human beings I've ever seen as like a 10-year-old, because he's just giant and tatted up, but was like the nicest guy alive. And was obviously just like went to low A and was just like absolutely mad. Like I was like, oh, this is the greatest baseball player I've ever seen. So
he's
I mean,
monster. He's huge.
You remember those homers?
He was an actual like. It was like when you saw the Monstars from Space Jam as a kid. That's what Josh Hamilton was to me as a kid. I was like, this guy like stole someone else's talent because he could pitch. They were like, he could throw 99. He could hit. He could do everything. It was incredible.
His book was the first one I read since like elementary school. I read it in like college, and that was the first book I'd read since I was in elementary school. Great book, by the way.
Josh Hamilton in 2011 was like the most amazing thing ever.
And you remember him in 2009 at the might have been 2008, the last Yankee Stadium home run derby.
Oh yeah,
when he was just peppering shit off the fucking facade.
The worst part is he didn't win because like that was like the semifinal round or something.
Yeah, so he was just
That is the funniest part about that one, Tom, is like people talk about that. Like if that home run derby gets brought up, it's like, oh, remember Josh Hamilton? It's like, yeah, but who won it? Like, I don't even know who won it.
I just think of Josh
Hamilton.
It was one of those two. Yeah.
Minnesota guys.
Dude, I remember that. I think it was 09, wasn't it? It was either the first year of the new Yankee Stadium or
it was last year. It was 08. It was last year.
Okay. So yeah, it was the last year of the Yankee Stadium.
Dude.
Yeah.
He was so out of breath going into that final round.
Think of how much effort you put in to just take G hacks.
Guys sitting there bat tipping.
Yeah.
The bat tip. The 5-year all-star run that he had. Dude, in 2010, he hit .359 with a .411 on base and a .633 slug. Good for a 1044 OPS. That is 170 OPS plus. That is 70% better than the league average. Ozeary won the MVP. It's fucking unbelievable. What a player. God.
We were talking about win-win trades in the office, and one of my favorite all-time win-win trades is the Edison Volquez for Josh Hamilton trade, because Hamilton obviously goes off and does that. Volquez the next year in Cincinnati is an all-star, 17-6, a 3.21 ERA in 33 starts, 200 innings. You know, guy was like – it was one of those rare trades where somehow both teams immediately just got better because of it.
Yeah.
I mean, Hamilton will never make it into the Hall of Fame. You know, he only played 9 seasons, and he really only played 5 full seasons. But God bless it, was he an unbelievable player for those 5 seasons, and that was fun to watch. Let's do Sloan Screen Time. The people don't want to hear us talk about how much we love Josh Hamilton right this second, okay? People want to hear about Screen Time. They want to hear about Sloan. They want to hear about automatic hand washers and flushers. Okay.
Back, did they have Mountain Cali?
No, I actually held. I didn't go once. Not once. Not till we got back into New York, Connecticut.
It's tough, Connecticut. Dude. That's commitment.
Yeah, I mean that is again always working. Always, you know.
I have a really high number today, and I'm embarrassed. So I'm gonna go first and get it out of the way. We're at 528.
Wow. Even that high, you're disgusting. You're such a dork that's like you're such a high number.
447.
What?
447.
Good day, Tom. This new work schedule's got you locked in.
Damn it, Dakota. 420, Zach.
Yep. 421 now.
432. I thought I had it today.
The high number for me. It's gross.
I thought I had it today. Man, Ian finished lessons.
We got Ian.
I just want to tell the people we're going to start a segment where every week we tweet out or in Instagram on the story our screen times. So we're going to hold ourselves accountable. We're going to put it out there on the line, and we would like the people to tweet back at us. They're also their slow screen times. But tough week for me. I got that one out of the way. We're not going to post that, and then we'll do it in a couple weeks once the John Boy people get the thing out. That was episode 144, Anthony Rizzo. Shout out, friend of the pod. Haven't done it on in a while. Maybe we'll get him on before spring training comes. 144, the Compound Podcast, brought to you by Parsi Rum. When I say Parsi, you say
Rum.
Did you guys watch that clip from Compound Live?
Yeah, it was sick.
Yeah, baby. All right, we'll see you next week.